KPCA LP, Petaluma, California, 103.3 FM. Good morning, and welcome to Inside Petaluma. I'm Cindy Thomas, co-hosting, as usual, with Jason Davies and Janice Kitty Thompson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Petaluma.
Yes. Happy Friday.
Another one. They keep coming.
Well, yeah. How is it that we're so lucky to be on every Friday?
We're just special people.
We are.
How lucky are we that it just keeps coming? But we have Fridays.
With power.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I mean, you know, what are the odds?
With power.
Yeah,
well,
that's not
the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, not a laughing matter.
Put things in perspective. Yeah. So, and I feel like, Watergate was a walk in the park compared to what's happening now.
Oh, it's crazy.
And this is, you know, high anxiety.
Yeah.
I talked to my doctor yesterday about my anxiety over, you know, this guy being in the White House and being basically kidnapped and not.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there's much money behind him, and that's just so shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, so, here we go.
I thought we fought the Nazis and won and all that, right?
No, but, you know, if you look at history, there's been a lot of killing since then.
Yeah.
It's just, people didn't quite realize what was happening with other administrations and killing the Nazis.
So somehow we jumped to national politics.
Well, I think that's partly only because we had a power outage.
Right.
And, you know, we're, you know, concerned about a power outage, and I'm kind of looking at the bigger picture.
Bigger picture, yes.
And
you're
thinking
right.
Of the people that are being, you know, murdered that actually were protecting our country. So that's my spiel for today.
That's your spiel for today.
Yeah, but let's not ignore the fact that a lot of people lost wages this week.
That's
they
true.
Lost
yep.
food.
That's true.
Yep.
They lost income if they are store owners. So
it was big. Yeah, I'm not thinking that it is
impressive. And it's frustrating when you read articles about massive pay, golden parachutes and pay increases and things for some executives at PG&E that left.
That happens with every company. And, I mean, you know, the bigger picture is that is what happens, and that is capitalism. And when you have your money in the stock market and stuff, I mean, that's the way the world goes around. And
but they really,
really like some tweaking of it.
But the product, I was listening to someone on the radio who was pretty smart yesterday, and they were talking about how free market philosophy doesn't apply to every type of industry,
right.
Particularly when you don't have real competition. When PG&E is really a monopoly, and you know, now we've got a situation where they can't afford to really do the improvements that are needed, and so cutting the power is the only solution. But
well, it's like a third world country if you're having to cut your power.
Yeah.
I mean, something's really wrong with this picture, but it's not just PG&E.
No.
It's bigger than that.
Well, partly also it's a technological thing and a model change where we need to be thinking more of decentralizing power. Building homes that have advanced solar battery backup systems that are totally contained.
Right.
Because then there's the whole issue of running power cables to rural areas that are prone to fire danger goes away.
Well, first that has to become affordable, because I have a solar home, which does absolutely nothing if you have no batteries to store the power.
So if we have a progressive tax and we, stop subsidizing the oil companies... I mean, this can happen, and this is stuff that's part of the new Green New Deal. But
I don't really think that people realize that you can get solar, and then you can have the backup batteries to continue going. It's like Cindy says, solar.
Well, PG&E doesn't want that. They need to be continuing to be part of their grid system.
You got to take out a second mortgage on your home to be able to afford the batteries.
Right.
Yeah, currently, that's true.
Well, and then, you know, I'm thinking my hot water heater needs to be replaced.
Yeah.
And so I was deciding I was going to go ahead with electricity. Now I think, well, maybe I want to continue with my gas one, because, you know, I mean, it's this catch-22 that we're in right now, because we're kind of going from one type of energy to another type of energy, And there's this, you know, 10-year, 20-year gap in between.
I think
at my
faster.
Age, I'll be dead by the time
it
happens.
Faster. I think it'll happen faster.
I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, it's the revolution in these batteries is really, really a big deal. They're getting cheaper and they last longer. I wanted to mention, I guess, something from the paper here, and that is that power restoration progress is rated here. 79% of Sonoma County now has their power back, 64% of Lake County, 77% of Mendocino County, and 76% of Napa, or is that 70? Yeah, 76. Sometimes my eyesight's not so good. Anyway, so it is getting better, at least, for those people that are out of power.
Yes, it is. So that's a good thing.
But like I was telling you earlier, it was very painful for me to have to throw away everything.
Yeah,
my refrigerators.
Give you credit.
Two refrigerators, and my freezers did okay, except for soft things like ice cream. The meat stayed pretty solid. It started to thaw out, but
I was actually reading in the paper that Oliver's was giving away their ice cream.
Wow!
And so people got free ice cream, but you had to eat it right away. But you know, that was one thing that I read this morning in the newspaper. Yeah, so.
I didn't need that ice cream anyway.
I like ice cream.
Me too.
With apple pie.
So can we introduce our guests?
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, they might want to give some feedback on some of this stuff we're talking about, I would think. And with us today, we have Dr. Amanda Morrison, who is the coordinator of Our House, which is located at the Santa Rosa J.C. Petaluma campus. And Elias Carreño, who is an outreach coordinator with Santa Rosa JC. And I'm not sure, Elias, are you at the Petaluma campus?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Petaluma campus.
So good morning, and thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us. It's a pleasure being here.
Yeah. And specifically why we brought Amanda and Elias here this morning was so that we could talk about LumaFest. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about all kinds of things, but specifically we want to hear about LumaFest. So...
what is it?
LumaFest is back. We haven't had a full LumaFest since 2016. We had kind of a LumaFest light last year, but it's an annual tradition at the Petaluma campus of SRJC. Basically a big open house and family festival celebration where the campus kind of invites the whole community to come check out what's going on and encourage young people to go to college and see all the programs. And then there's all kinds of like festivities and entertainment.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I like about it is it's also a culture event. So it's kind of, it's an open house and a fun fair, but also deep within it, deep rooted. We have a partnership with the Los Muertos Petaluma and people get to learn. So if you're of a Latin background or Latino, you can go in and just kind of celebrate and be in ceremony. We have Aztec dancers. We have a wide variety of events, spoken word, open houses. So it's everything from anybody who's interested in education. If you're interested in just partaking, we're also going to be screening the movie Coco. So if you and your family are interested, that's one of the events going on later in the day. But we're also going to invite people to participate in possibly if they're interested and if they stand. We have an altar set up in the library and altar set up in different parts of the campus. And when a person has an altar, the idea is that you kind of pay homage and celebrate that person's life. So you put the person's picture on the altar and then you decorate the altar. And part of the decorations are food. So in the campus, we can't have food because of ants, right? But for me, the idea growing up was as a kid, you cannot touch the food, you cannot touch the sweets. So the idea is that your loved ones come in, my spirits, and el olfato, right? So that's kind of the smell of it. So they take in the smell of the sweets, the smell of their favorite foods, and then they come in, right? So what we believe is first of all, do not eat the food that's on the counter, even though it's like very, very good food. But afterwards, it's supposed to not have flavor. So if you do try it, it's supposed to have not flavor because they take in, breathe in the aroma of the food. So that's just kind of like one of the special things for me, bringing in my aunt who passed away, my grandfather, my cousin who passed away, and my grandparents on my mother's side, just to kind of remember them and also remember the food that they had while they were alive.
Nice. I also heard that there's going to be
classes on Sugar Skull?
Those are fun. So if we want to break down the event, we're going to have things for family. We're going to have things for... Yeah. So one of the things that the programs that are exclusive for Santa Rosa is our Vet Tech program, as specifically at Petaluma campus. So we're going to have different events. We're going to bring in exotic animals for the family to see. We're going to have different events like, you know, guess the species based on the X-ray, the skeletal X-ray. We're going to have raffles to win a day at Safari West. And then for the kids who want to move around, we're going to have obstacle courses. We're going to have a station where they can paint sugar skulls, where they can get their face painted. We're going to have events for the family if they want to watch different bands, if they want to watch Ballet Folclorico, which Ballet Folclorico is regional dances from different parts of Mexico. So it's not just one dance and one attire, I guess. It could be multiple different types of attire and multiple different types of dances. So it's a big event. We're going to have a lot of activities for everybody to partake in.
Sounds great. I'm going to be out of town, unfortunately.
I'm going to be out of town. I'm trying to get out of it. I know.
Well, I'm going.
Good for you. Yeah. I'm going to try it. Well, I'll tell my wife about it and my friends.
So, Amanda, what part do you play in all this?
I've been helping. I kind of play this role as a cultural worker on campus. I bring a lot of... throughout the semesters, I bring guest performers and speakers. So for LumaFest, I reached out, was looking for some Mexican regional music to bring. In the past, we've had big mariachi ensembles, but this year we have a band called Clave Trebol. And they are, I think they would fall under the category of sireño music. It's a kind of norteño music, and they're like a quartet of all strings. So guitars, bass. So it's a good, very guitar, acoustic guitar heavy sound. It's really beautiful. Sometimes if you didn't grow up listening to other styles of Mexican regional music like banda, it's an acquired taste a little bit. If it's not part of your cultural tradition, it's got tubas, it's got really crashing drums. Clave Trebol is a smaller ensemble with this kind of acoustic guitar sound that really has a lot of like appeal cross-culturally, I've noticed, which is interesting. So I'm really excited to have them. And then, as a Chicana myself, I have a lot of, both Elias and I have a lot of kind of connections in the community with a lot of artists and practitioners. So bringing the Danza Azteca group, their name is Danza Azteca Otli Yolilitli. There's like four or five or maybe more.
Yeah.
Danzante groups in Sonoma County, and they're one of the really prominent ones. So they'll open off the day with a ceremony, a blessing, and some dance, some indigenous dance.
Oh yeah, one thing to note that, and so one thing I had to learn as well, Danza Azteca is a religion, so to speak. When people dance, they're not dancing for other people to clap for. They're dancing for themselves and to pray, right? So one of the first things they do is they pay homage to the four winds, the four directions, in the beginning and in the end. So you'll see people burning copal, which is a plant that they burn, a specific aroma. And that's to pay homage to the four directions, right? So then, and then when they go into the ceremonial dance, it's them praying, it's them releasing, you know, the goodness of their hearts to go back into the world, and hopefully it comes back to them. So what I see a lot is when danzantes take the floor, and afterwards it's almost like all people are like clapping and thank you for that, but it's more of a cultural embodiment. So the one thing that I've seen some groups do is that at the end, they invite people to partake in the dance. So at the end, they from the public, people who are willing, they'll take them, and then they'll do a special kind of like a snake type formation where they go in a circle, and the circle for some people represents, you know, for me it represents Inlakesh. So, you know, we're all connected. You are my other me. So if I hurt you, I hurt myself. If I love you, I love myself. So when they go into that formation, they go in a circle, they don't get tangled up. And once they go in the middle, they find that because of the pattern, they're able to unwind and easily come out too. So it kind of represents that we're all connected. We're all praying for each other. We're all praying for the earth specifically. So I think it's a beautiful ceremony to open up the event.
Praying for the earth is not a bad thing.
I mean, I love this tradition and bringing tradition because so many of us have lost that over the years. And last week I was at St. Vincent's watching the ceremony, and it was, and watching the dancers. It was a lot of fun. What I found was there were not enough Caucasians there. I mean, and so I'm hoping, you know, that that's going to be different at the JC because it's actually within a neighborhood with neighborhoods with a lot of young people. And so in the past, I mean, how many people just in the community come to this and not just of a certain culture?
Yeah, I think our campus and LumaFest in particular is a really nice crossroads where, I mean, our community is predominantly white and Latinx, right? Or Latino, right. Latino, especially Mexican-American. And it does tend to, though both populations tend to be represented together as opposed to the kind of segregated, self-segregated world we live in where it's usually, you know, folks are, it's either one or the other, you know?
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. Yeah. So it kind of reflects our student body as well and their families, you know.
Well, and that goes to the fact that you work with Literacy Works, you know, to get young people into college, especially Latinos, Latinx. And I think it's a great program. I work, I happen to be on their Friends board and, you know, working with Chris Schultz. And last year, eight young people went to colleges, and it was universities and state colleges. And that was a really good percentage.
Yeah, I can't speak enough on Literacy Works. I mean, this I'm new, fairly new in my position. I've been with the college for about 4 years, but with this position, I've been here for about 3 months. My previous successor, colleague, who was in the position, very good friend of mine, Yesenia Hurtado, she did an amazing job growing the program. So when she started as a EL coordinator, which means English Language Learner Coordinator, and then it kind of transformed just into general outreach. So she was able to build and forge that partnership with Chris Schultz, and I've been able to work with some of the students who have been started Literacy Works, because to start Literacy Works, just to give some people some context, we have a basic college 101, right, which is college level English. At our campus, it's called English 1A. So when you usually in the past you've had to take entrance exams or assessment testing, and if you fell below the English 1A or English 101 criteria, you have to take remediation or remedial classes. And some students may take one remedial class and then be college eligible, or may take two semesters before they reach that English 101 level. With Chris Schultz, they'll take students anywhere from as low English language learners to, for us, it means ESL 714, which to people out there listening probably means gibberish, but that's it's classified as English as a second language, 714 course, which means that you're on the cusp of learning how to read, learning how to write, and your communication skills are growing, right? So Chris will work with people from the beginnings of starting to learn English to a couple semesters below remediation, and some of the students I've met are just amazing. Just to give you an example, some students have gone on to UC Berkeley, UCLA, UC Riverside, a whole bunch of colleges in the CSU system, so I can't speak enough on the program. And I mean, most of the scholarships, you have to be a full-time student, and sometimes full-time students in Sonoma County is very hard. If you're struggling to pay rent, you're struggling to feed yourself, pay all the extra bills, phone bills, clothe yourself, and then trying to go to school. And then you go to school for a class for an hour and a half, and you expect to do 3 hours of homework afterwards. You got to have to balance all that. And Literacy Works is very flexible with their students, very flexible with being part-time students. And the support is just truly awesome.
I mean, education is really the key. You know, you educate people, and then you can come together as a community. But when you're not educated, you kind of all sit in your little corners, and you don't respect other people's cultures, differences.
One thing that's cool about, so Elias and I both work in our house, the cultural center you mentioned, and it is kind of this like gathering place and clearinghouse and point of connection for all kinds of resources to connect with students from all different backgrounds. Like Literacy Works often does come in and interview prospective scholarship recipients in that space. We have Elias in there who's doing outreach to English language populations and beyond. We have a lot of our programs, student services programs that serve kind of vulnerable populations of students. So at SRJC, we have EOPS, which is to support low-income students with a lot of resources. We have our undocumented students services based in there. So we've kind of based a lot of these programs in one space, and then there's a central kind of lounge or hub or kind of chill area where students can just hang out and build these social connections too, which is really, really crucial in kind of sticking with college, that you feel engaged and you feel like, okay, I belong here. People know who I am. I'm not just an outsider, right? So it's become a nice
So did you see, because I know like literacy works that, you know, if you needed gas money or if you needed babysitting, you know, you were given a card. And so are you saying the same thing with the JC has another program in there that gives people resources so that they can actually get an education?
Yeah, there's a number of them, but I think, Literacy Works is a great partner, like a nonprofit partner, because they're working with folks who can't afford to be full-time students for various reasons, right? But there are other programs built into the community college system that support students with funds and scholarship and, you know, financial aid assistance. We try to bring it all together in one area so that it's less confusing of a landscape to navigate. Yeah. So you can access a lot of resources together in one spot.
So like your position, do you work at the larger campus, or is the Santa Rosa campus the one that you work in? I know you would work together with a larger campus, but do they have a coordinator up there?
They're actually, I'm based in Petaluma. I definitely collaborate with colleagues at the Santa Rosa campus. But the our house, our intercultural center, was sort of was a program that was launched at Petaluma specifically. And what happens is it's kind of cool because Petaluma is a little smaller. You can innovate things and try new things out. And then if they're successful, they get scaled up at the bigger campus.
Right.
So that
is
what's happening. There's going to be another intercultural center that's going to open its doors any day now, sometime this semester, I believe, at the Santa Rosa campus. It's sort of modeled on our house.
Yeah. So with the tax, you know, increase for facilities at the JC.
Mm-hmm.
So
Measure H.
Yeah. So did that help facilitate as far as getting facilities available? Or what's the connection with that? Or
I'm not in the case of our house at Petaluma campus. There, I think some of the building and the capital projects that are occurring in the college district as a whole, I mean, those are mostly funded by the taxpayer money of Measure H. It's good. Yeah, there's really exciting things. Like at Petaluma campus, we're with Measure H taxpayer funding, we're building a new student center that's inclusive of a lot of other programs and spaces. So not so much our house, but other really crucial things are being built and tried out and supported by our community.
It's a good neighbor in your community.
Yeah.
You know, being next to the JC, whether it's in Santa Rosa or in Petaluma.
Yeah. Yeah, we're really grateful that the community is investing in our college. So.
Yeah. Well, two of my granddaughters were in Spanish immersion in Davis. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I love being with Sophia because she'll sit there and start laughing because she knows what somebody is saying.
Nice.
And but in Petaluma, we have Loma Vista, which is a Spanish immersion, which used to be Bernard Eldred School.
Is it the dual immersion model?
It's the dual immersion model.
That's really interesting. I'm hearing from one, because I'm also a part-time professor at Sonoma State.
Okay.
And then just in talking to students at both colleges, a lot of them, when I ask them about their kind of journey of language learning, some of them who Spanish was their first language, some English was their first language, but some have been going to these dual immersion schools and having pretty good experiences. So that what in Windsor, Elias, it's Cali
Charter Language
Academy.
That was the first, right?
Yeah.
And then there's one in Santa Rosa, I think it's Cesar Chavez. It's becoming more popular where English dominant speakers and Spanish dominant speakers come together, right? And both the idea is you leave being fluent in the other language and you're together. So it actually is kind of a racially and ethnically desegregating kind of model too.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had kids, I'd be looking at those dual immersion schools.
I mean, well, Sophia at one point she was going to Mexico City to go to the university. And that's where she planned on going, and she's 11 now.
Mom,
and so, you know, I'm sure that, you know, shifts around, but it's just that she's even aware is what's really important. Mm-hmm. And socially, she's really aware of what's going on in the bigger picture.
Cool.
And, you know, we would talk about it during the 2016 election, and she's 11 now, so she was, you know, quite a bit younger.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, she emotionally loved her, the other students, and was really concerned for their families. And, you know, so there's a lot of good education, you know, that goes on. So I'm just a real proponent. And I wish, when I was in school at Bernard Eldridge, they were starting to learn how to speak Spanish, so we were going to be dual immersion. But then there was the big fight about, is it Castilian or, you know, what version? Mm. And then it all was dropped. And yet, you know, I was in fourth grade and can still remember what I learned in fourth grade. And if it had only gone on. So,
wow,
yeah.
Interesting.
Uh-huh.
Well,
yeah.
From my perspective, getting into, I mean, this is kind of Dr. Amanda Morris's field as well, but for me, growing up, I was always classified, like, when you fill up the intake forms, right, are you, Latino wasn't a word, Latino wasn't a category used in the early 90s, so I just remember always having to put Hispanic, right,
right.
And for me, Hispanic means from Spain, from Spain, right, my roots, if you look at me,
yeah.
For all the people that can't look at me, I'm short, brown, right,
yeah.
And I'm very happy, so I used to grow up, and my dad's very light-skinned, my mother's a lot more dark-skinned and very indigenous, right, So growing up, it was always kind of a clash. Because I was of darker skin tone, I was always more, we have words like prieto, moreno, negro, right?
Yeah.
And kind of words that aren't demeaning, but when said at a certain tone and repetitive, right, they are demeaning. So there's this thing called colorism in Mexico. It's rooted very deep. The lighter skin you are, the different you're treating, the darker skin you are. So even though we're all Mexican, we're all nationally Mexican, colorism is a big proponent, right? So even here, from Spain, for me, it's like I'm not Spanish. You can look at me; I don't look anything like a Spaniard. So
is the term mestizo, is that the correct term? Is that still the term?
Mestizo means what? It means mix.
Right.
It means we were mixed, right? Yeah. So for us, for Spanish, they would call the mixed population mestizo.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a word not from us. That's a word that was given to us, right? So if you ask me what do I categorize, I'm a human being.
Yeah,
I
like that.
From Earth. And if I was Asian, if I was from India, if I was from Russia, I would be the same equal proudness I am to be who I am for my family if I was from a different nationality, right? Mm-hmm. But taking in my cultural background and because I was submitted to this from birth, right? It's not like I got to choose. I was submitted to this from birth. I have to live with
none of us get to choose.
Exactly. So even here in the United States, looking at it more critically, you made a comment earlier where education is a wonderful thing, and education was the passport that changed my life completely, right? But at the same time, education doesn't nullify like if somebody has hatred,
discrimination.
Exactly. You can still be educated and even hate in a more productive manner, right?
Yeah.
So just because somebody is educated doesn't mean somebody has been exposed to a wide variety of cultures and history. So again, I go back to when we study, right? The Indians, quote unquote, Native Americans, and the first pilgrims, right? We have it as it was the Native Americans helping the pilgrims here, and it was a big happy Thanksgiving, right? When it was,
anything
like
but.
So it's like, okay, so I'm a colonizer, and I'm gonna go to your home, and I'm just gonna be like, okay, this looks nice. You have to leave, and I want everything you have.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Right. It's not gonna go down that non-violently, that civilized. So. Yeah. It was hostile takeover from the very beginning, and that's not a history that we're taught in the elementary or the middle school, right? So we're not taught that unless we want to learn that later on.
Did you?
That's very well put.
Yeah.
So you did a very good job of that.
Did you see the movie Apocalypto?
I did. Yeah.
The reason I ask is because
Mel Gibson.
Yes. I saw the movie, and my take on it was that it seemed to me like almost like Mel Gibson was almost being an apologist for the conquering. It was almost the way I viewed that movie. It was like at the very end, it was almost like they're being rescued by, you know, because it's so focused on what was happening among the native population there. You know, the beheading, some of the ritualistic killings and things like that. But I thought that it felt very slanted to me. It was sort of like at the end, and now, you know, I don't know. That's kind of, I'm not sure, because I know he's very Catholic, and
it is Mel Gibson. I mean,
yeah,
his background.
I don't remember the racism very well.
It's a, there's just a lot of, there's a lot of emphasis on the inner fighting that was happening.
The warfare of the Maya.
Yeah, and you hear that a lot sometimes when people are talking about.
Well, these were empires too.
Yeah, exactly.
Colonized as well.
So, and of course, there was a lot of warring among indigenous people in the U.S. as well. But that doesn't justify what white people did.
Well, I mean, the world never saw the level of conquest and takeover, you know, the five European empires basically conquered the entire world. So, and chattel slavery was something very unique to the five European empires, or however many there were, even those forms of slavery existed. But
so at the Lumafest, it starts at 10 a.m. and there's this
back to Lumafest. Back to the Lumafest. But I'm fascinated.
It's I love this
kind of cultural practices are informed by our heritage and our history, especially the Latinx community and the Mexican American community. That's part of who we are.
Yeah,
so let's go. Let's jump back to Lumafest with this. Okay, so going back to Lumafest and Danza. So we were on the topic of colonization, right?
Yeah.
Danza came up because we were colonized. So before, Danzas looked drastically different because they had to go in hiding and they had to disguise a lot of what they do. And they have different instruments that had a lot of European influence, like string instruments, right?
Yeah.
So they had to go into hiding.
Spanish guitars.
Exactly, that they use, right? But they had to go into hiding and kind of hide it so they wouldn't be punished for the ceremonies they would do. So now we have kind of a... we're trying to get back to the origin, but we probably won't ever get back to the origin. But now it's like a mix, kind of.
Right. I mean, I think you mentioned the concept of mestizaje.
Yeah.
Right? It's the concept of being mixed, and it's controversial, too.
Yeah.
But it is the model of kind of the dominant way of thinking in Mexico about race. It's an acknowledgement that our people are a mixed people because of colonialism.
Yeah.
So it's a different acknowledgement than we have done here in the United States, which has always been very black and white.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, it is a concept that came from Spaniards.
Yeah.
So the two different dance styles we have represented at Lumafest, I think, are interesting representations of that struggle, of contending with that history and heritage. Because
it's not like you asked for it.
No.
I mean, the Catholicism was kind of pushed.
Yeah.
And then they sort of appropriated the traditions.
The European traditions blend with the indigenous traditions. It's anthropologists call it syncretism.
Yeah.
To survive, you try to maintain some of your indigenous practices.
Some people
you have to hide them sometimes and then incorporate the new ones that are more accepted, and then it becomes a blend.
Some people might call it ethnic cleansing. But
it's a way of resisting a kind of ethnic cleansing by hiding and kind of subterfuge, but keeping some traditions alive.
So the ceremony opens the thing at 10. You've got to be there sharp.
Yeah, for the danzantes.
Okay.
Right.
And then what happens next?
What do we have next?
We have the
chemistry magic show.
Well, chemistry magic show is a little later. So we have the vet. So kind of an event all of its own. It's a vet tech open house, and that takes place from 11 to 3. And then kind of going on with the program. So it's Danza Azteca. You can go visit the vet tech. Then at 11 a.m. we have Zumba, so led by Ruth Taylor, so anybody can partake in that, you know, men, women, everybody, the kids. I participated in Zumba, it's very fun. And then at 10.
Now, Zumba, is that with the ball, or how is that?
No.
Okay.
It's not that
it's like movement.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So exercising with the dance. So a lot of people prefer to dance rather than exercise, but dancing also burns calories, so.
It's like Jane Fonda if she was Chicana.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. That's right.
I sell my leg warmers.
I love Jane Fonda.
Oh my God, I see her in that exact picture with the leg warmers.
and the crop top.
Yeah.
So moving on from Zumba, we have the Chemistry Magic Show at 11:30, and that's at Carol L. Ellis Auditorium, basically our big theater in Petaluma campus.
It's a great theater.
Yeah. We also have Wednesdays the Petaluma
cinema series.
Sorry, they have some great films every Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's linked to a film class that Mike Crana teaches, but it's also open to the public. The screenings and the lectures,
and that's where PCA gets a lot of their interns.
Well, that's what I that's what I was going to the connection
or communication.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. And then at 12 we have spoken word. basically poetry. And then there's going to be an opportunity, so if anybody from the crowd has any pieces they would like to share, they're also going to have the opportunity to do that. And then at 12:15, we're going to do Ballet Folklorico. And that's kind of where you get to see the difference, right, and kind of the mix from going from Danza Azteca, who is trying to be very traditional, and then you go to Ballet Folklorico, which is blending and basically different regional dances. So, and they have that program very, 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 very beautiful.
Yeah, the Ballet Folklorico group is connected to the community, the congregants of St. Vincent's, mm-hmm. right? So it's kind of a whole community that really comes out and represents at both the citywide Day of the Dead and Luma Fest as well.
Definitely.
Shout out to Abraham Solar.
We had Abraham and Margot Gallagher on our show 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and Margot and some of the Dia de los Muertos folks have helped with providing the crafting opportunities and the artistic opportunities at Luma Fest.
So I didn't eat breakfast this morning. Food's on my brain. What about the food? What kind of food are we got?
I want to talk about the food too.
So we're gonna have three different food trucks. We're gonna have Mexican food and
like street taco kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I love
it. Yeah. We couldn't have one without one. So we're gonna have three different food trucks. So it's not just gonna be Mexican food. We're gonna have a variety of different foods. And then some of the clubs, we're going to have con candy, popcorn. One thing I didn't mention was...
toothbrushes. Instructions on dental program out. I'm a dental hygienist.
So one thing I neglected to mention was that we're going to have boots. So this is part of this Luma Fest celebration. Exactly. We're going to get a chance to every most of the clubs that we have on campus, a lot of different booths, a lot of different intersectionalities, you can say, are going to have a platform to have an information table, mm-hmm. and then to also have some goodies. So some of those goodies, some of the tables have cotton candy, some of the tables have popcorn. We always have different people tabling, so usually we have somebody passing out a floss and toothpaste and toothbrushes, right? So
they had really good cookbooks at Sunday's event at St. Vince's.
Vegan Mexican, I grabbed one of those.
I'm looking at that thing. There were actually two of them, these cookbooks, and because I'm trying to perfect my Mexican cooking, which has actually been somewhat successful by spices and cooking, long. And so I'm taking these recipes and actually changing them a little bit, but they're great bases.
Well, remember, we had those jackfruit tacos at that event that we went to in Santa Rosa. And those were great and apparently totally vegan. I never had jackfruit.
Is that like a substitute for al pastor?
Well, it's funny to mention that because that is the one I always order. But no, this was totally vegan. And jackfruit is a Latin American. Mm-hmm. They're really big. And
they're really smelly if you don't know how to cook them. Yeah.
But it was so good. I never had it before. So I don't know if you're going to have any of that. But
I doubt it.
Tamales are also great. So that should be great. Lots of food, and there's going to be lots of live music too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A lot of the dance. I would say there's two kind of dance moments on the program, mm-hmm. and then the band Clave Trebol is going to finish out the day
at
2 p.m.
And then if you're interested about learning more about the Day of the Dead, Ms. Laura Lacage is actually my professor when I was at the San Jose Junior College. She's going to give a lecture on the Day of the Dead.
She's a local scholar and expert on Mesoamerican pre-Columbian indigenous culture.
Rosa Sanchez, she's a hairdresser in Petaluma, and she did a Day of the Dead for my mother and her siblings.
An altar.
An altar. Mm-hmm. And, and I just think about that and how beautiful it was. And, I'd like to, continue that. But each year she does, different families.
Professor Lacay will break it down and explain all the traditional elements of altar building. That's sort of a product of mestizaje as well, with Catholic elements built in, but it predates the Spaniards, and she knows all about that tradition.
Yeah, Abraham kind of gave us an overview of that when he was here a couple weeks ago.
Cool.
Yeah, it was really moving. He's so good at, being descriptive about all of these things. It was a wonderful day.
We'll do a quick shout out just for the Petaluma Police. Ken Savano, the chief, was there last Sunday, but also Officer Candereth. I don't know what his last name is, but you know, he speaks Spanish, and it was really interesting watching how people were men specifically, not women, were interacting with him. And so I thought it was really positive that we have at least three members of our police force that speak Spanish, and I'm hoping more, and I'm kind of hoping that they're there, that they come on the 19th and really show a presence, because watching them interact in the conversation, even though I didn't know what they were saying, it went on for probably 15, 20 minutes, and I thought it was positive.
Well, that's a whole other layer when it comes to, I'm kind of being kind of careful with using the word, and I don't know how much y'all talk about it, but people who are undocumented in this country, right? So it's a whole different layer when you're speaking to a police officer. I remember growing up, I come from a mixed status family, so I was born in this country, gives me the privilege of having a 9-digit number called a social security number that allows me to apply for a license, allows me to not get deported, allowed me to apply for FAFSA to get Cal Grant and Pell Grant, so financial aid to continue my studies, got me a lot of into a lot of scholarships that you have to be a resident of the United States or a U.S. citizen, right? So it gave me all of these benefits by being born on one side of a geopolitical line rather than the other side, right? So, but because other people in my family didn't have that privilege growing up, I grew up in a mixed status family, undocumented family. And when we saw a police officer, for us, we automatically knew, right? So the person driving with tents up, not driving without a license, and it was always going to be like, you know, mijo, look back. Let me know as soon as he's not tailing us. Okay. So it's always a tense moment. We were like, okay.
That's
okay. All right, he turned the corner. You know, shoulders go down, relaxation, everything's back in. But essentially, the person that doesn't have a license, as soon as they turn on the ignition in the car first thing in the morning, they're driving around with the risk of possibly being stopped and possibly having the car impounded, right? So these conversations with the police officer that speaks Spanish, right, I believe are very crucial. I was able to go to a presentation at San Jose Middle School in Novato, and there was the resource officer spoke Spanish, was of Latin descent, and he was giving the parents such valuable information. For right now, e-cigarettes are on the rise, right? He was giving us great information on how to look for signs for their children, because a lot of these children are telling their parents, and I remember being this child, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes the parents don't speak English. Mama, buy me this, or give me this much money, and I'll get this. What is it, mijo? Oh, it's something that'll help me with school. It's something that'll help for my backpack. So, okay, whatever, you know, they'll kind of flash out some cash if you're lucky enough. And some of these kids are taking advantage of that, and now with Amazon lockers, right?
Yeah.
They're able to send these e-cigarettes or whatever they buy contraband and to send to these lockers without their parents even noticing.
Yep.
So it was a very great talk, and the parents were, you know, absolutely just kind of like, thank you for coming here and sharing this information. And that's just a great way to kind of build trust, because coming from a family where you kind of see a police officer and you see a gun and you're kind of like closed off, having these conversations kind of like, okay, there's things that I need to learn about, and they build trust and they build connection.
Yeah. It's a huge subject, and I'm quite aware of really what happens. And I think it's great, you know, hearing that the officers are going into the school talking to the parents, because, you know, otherwise it's the children talking to the parents, and you're right. It doesn't matter what nationality you are.
Mm-hmm.
If you want something, you'll figure out how to get it from your parents.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think it's positive, but we have a long ways to go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned driving and the stress of driving if you're undocumented. I remember there was an effort to require citizenship in order to get a driver's license in California. And there are a lot of people that just, I don't think, were thinking very deeply about it. And, well, yeah, sure. I mean, they should have to be legal or, you know, documented in order to, get a driver's license. But the problem with that, of course, is we want safe roads.
Exactly.
We want people driving safely, and of course we want them to get licenses. We want them to be discouraged for learning how to drive.
We just need to do a better job of making that accessible for folks.
Can I mention the week leading up to LumaFest actually is the Undocumented Student Week of Action that is recognized throughout the California Community College system, even by the chancellor. And so here in Petaluma and at the Santa Rosa campus, we actually have events that are in support of supporting our undocumented students and their families, including on Thursday afternoon, I'm going to lead a training that's good for folks who want to be allies to our undocumented brothers and sisters. The training is to get you linked up with the Rapid Response Network. I wish it was branded Migra Watch because I think that's more to the point. It's the network formed a lot through North Bay Organizing Project throughout Napa and Sonoma counties. It's kind of like a cop watch, but it's like ICE Watch. That you become part of a network, and then you get a text if ICE are violating someone's rights, and often they do it in the middle of the night or at awkward times, and you come out, and you don't interfere, you just film it. So it's a really concerted effort, because ICE does tend to violate people's, they don't usually have warrants.
Have there been some raids recently in the area?
I think maybe last year. I don't know. It seems like they're cropping up throughout the Bay Area, as in much of the nation. I can't remember.
Yeah, how do I become a sanctuary for these people?
Connected to the Rapid Response Network is an accompaniment group. So if you want to support people who are going through the legal system and use your privilege as a citizen, there's an accompaniment program.
That's very interesting.
So Rapid Response
is
Network.
On what date? On this Thursday.
Thursday of this coming
Which
week.
Is going to be the 17th.
Yeah, I don't have the date on my head.
It is the 17th.
I believe it's at 3 p.m. To double check, go to Our House's website. It's the URL is a little long to say, so just type SRJC Our House. Google it.
Into the browser. Okay.
Yeah, Google it.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to run out of time if I don't change the subject here real quick, but I introduced you, Angela, as Dr.
Amanda.
I'm sorry, Amanda.
No worries.
We have a Dr. Angela show here. That's I got it on the brain. I apologize. Amanda, I introduced you as Dr. Amanda Morrison, and I want you to share with us how you came about getting that title.
I mean, I'm from here. I went to high school at Santa Rosa High. In my late 20s, I decided I wanted to go back to graduate school and go into a doctoral program. So I went out to the University of Texas in Austin. They had a cultural anthropology program that also had a lot of Mexican American studies built into it, and that was my interest. So I left home, and that was hard for me. And worked on my doctorate there. Wound up doing a dissertation, wrote this like book length long thing, but it was about the Bay Area hip hop scene.
Oh, cool.
I used to be a music journalist. And
are you a musician also?
I'm not a musician. Okay. I'm just kind of a music, aficionado.
Oh, Jason.
Like a sociologist of music scenes is interesting because I've seen in the Bay Area historically been very multiracial.
Ethnomusicology.
Yeah, that's an offshoot of anthropology. Oftentimes ethnomusicologists focus on sort of folkloric traditions. I was looking at hip-hop and very kind of commercial traditions. But that's also part of the tradition of studying popular music. And I'm always keying in on multiracial spaces and practices because it's so sadly uncommon in our society. So, that's my interest.
Very cool. Well,
This is so interesting, this conversation. I mean, I'm sorry that it's going to end soon.
Well, I was just going to add that I appreciate that you have this statement on the website under policies and procedures for the participants. It's number 2. The use of styrofoam is prohibited at LumaFest, and the use of plastic water bottles, plastic bags, and balloons is strongly discouraged. Please help us with our sustainability efforts.
That's awesome.
I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. Trying to go green as much as possible.
Yeah. Well, the city of Petaluma is looking at having a styrofoam ban.
Yeah.
And so that's coming to the council really soon, and...
Oh, it's
all good.
Yeah. We have some really good sustainability advocates in the district.
I'm bummed I'm going to miss this, but I will help spread the word because it seems like a really great event. I just
so spread the word like around the community that the JC is around. I mean, how do they know that there's events going on?
Like the students?
Not necessarily the students, but, you know, there's the park next door. You know, there's schools. How do you get the information so parents know to go that you're having
this one man right here?
So we on the radio.
There's more, but you're a big part of it.
Basically, we have a lot of banners, so we try to get as much or try to take advantage of as much of the square footage of what we have. The advertisements, so every time you walk by or drive by or walk by the college, you hopefully you see a banner. We also have businesses that are courteous enough.
There's these really gorgeous 11x17 posters hanging all over town.
I love the poster.
Yeah. It's
and then when we go to school, we pass around a rec card, basically a smaller version of that, and we pass them out to the students give them their parents, and it's just kind of, so we try to hit the schools. We also do community events. We do tabling events. We did tabling events at the farmer's market, Sonoma, Roner Park, Petaluma, Santa Rosa, Ranch or Cotati. So we try to be out and about as much as we can and try to spread the word. I mean, this is a great event. It's nothing to do. If you don't want to have anything to do with education, you could just partake in the fun events. If you're interested in taking out some of our programs, you can also do that as well.
So and the food.
And
the
food.
I was
going
to say participation in the food is cultural.
So. I just love the Aztec dancing and stuff. That is so cool.
Yeah.
Really neat to watch.
Really beautiful.
So we have been talking with Dr. Amanda Morrison and Elias Carreño from Santa Rosa JC, and the event we are discussing is LumaFest. It's being held at the Santa Rosa JC Petaluma campus Saturday, October 19th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's free admission, free parking, food, fun, and culture. So do come out and visit.
Hope to see y'all.
Thank you both for being here. Yeah. Anything else you want to add? We've got a few minutes.
Yeah. I'm sorry about
that. Go ahead.
I really forgot to mention this. So part of our house is the Intercultural Center. We have a lot of departments there. So we have EOPS, Extended Opportunity Program Services. If you're a student that's taking 12 units or more, and you fall and you apply for FAFSA and you fall below and your EFC is low enough, basically expected family contribution, check out the program because this program gives you priority one registration, which means you don't have to wait in line to take or get any classes you want. They also give you book vouchers valued up to $300 a semester. We all know books are expensive, and you get your own counselor. We also have Amanda Morrison, our great coordinator, who coordinates a lot of events. We had a great author. Best-selling author this past week, actually, Victor Villaseñor. We also have, you know, outreach in me, but we also have foster youth and kinship programs. So if you've ever been in the foster care system, there's programs for you. And the last one I want to mention is the Dream Center. If you all, so I mentioned Undocumented prior in this podcast or in this radio show, sorry. And one thing I want to stress, if you're listening, if you're a teacher, if you're an administrator, if you work at the schools, if you're a parent, you don't have to be documented to go to school. You don't have to have a GED to go to school. There are different policies like AB 540. There's SB 2000 or AB 2000. There's SB 68. So what that means is basically gibberish to a lot of people. But just know, if you don't have any kind of status, come to the Dream Center. We have a lot of help for those people, and those for those people who want to be advocates for those people who want to help those communities. Check out the website dream.santarosa.edu. There's a lot of great resources in there. So just gotta come check us out. And at the college, we welcome anybody and everybody.
Yeah, great. Okay, so that's not this coming Saturday. No. It's the following Saturday, which is LumaFest. But this coming Saturday is the celebration at the Petaluma Mail Depot
tomorrow.
So yes.
When you say this coming, tomorrow. We're talking tomorrow. Wow.
I keep forgetting. It's when you're retired, every day's up.
Except when you're out without power.
Wow, yeah. Anyway, so yeah, tomorrow at the Petaluma Mail Depot, 6 p.m.
Is that
big
the official kickoff?
Yes.
That's
when
it goes all out for a day this morning.
Oh, I got to do it. I'm not going to miss that. I'll be here tomorrow.
Yeah.
At St. Vincent Church. It was amazing.
It was amazing, but I think what was most amazing is I bought these tamales, and oh my God, I didn't know what a real great tamale tastes like. It was like cream. It was really amazing. So I bought four and
have you ever made them?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
But they certainly weren't the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were good, but they weren't the same. But I make them, yeah.
That's you make a good tamale, I bet.
They were gringo tamales.
No, the tamale wasn't so great, but my...
Oh, the masa was really smooth and creamy.
Oh, the masa was smooth and creamy, where mine was not.
I just go to, what is it? What is the market that sells pre-made masa?
Oh, you know what? That's...
Lamas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good pre-made
lamas. I was just a little yesterday.
I make tortillas.
I'm very pocha.
That's pretty easy. I get the Prosecco stuff and make tortillas with the press and everything. That's a lot of fun.
You went all out, yeah.
It's just really fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you both again for being here. And so you know, I don't know if Angela told you that this show will be posted to our website, insidepetaluma.com. So if any of your friends or family missed today, we were also streaming live. Angela knew that we were streaming live. She's stuck in Napa with no power. And she's the one that coordinated for our listeners. She's the one that coordinated our guests today. And go to insidepetaluma.com, and it'll be posted there in a couple of days. I also put a snapshot of the poster on our Facebook page, which is KPCA Inside Petaluma. Go there and look at it, and then like us while you're there.
Oh, and
because as I always say, we're likable. We're likable. And again, thank you, Angela and Elias, for being here. And we're just about done. We got about 1 minute.
Oh. What do we do for 1 minute?
Well,
I know what we do.
I
we play music.
Last night, I was getting them just all ready for music tonight. Yeah, I actually cooked them up. Took the skin off. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And I always forget to mention who follows our show. We have Jordan Torres follows our show every Friday at noon, and his show is called Brown Boy Talking. So, come listen. All right, you guys, have a good weekend.
Yeah, bye.
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 Bye, all. We'll be right back.